RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Friday, the Friday edition of the Dark Delay Podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans.
Good.
I'm so excited today for some reason. I just woke up in a great mood. No reason.
I'm just happy to wake up without a fever. That's all.
Yes, you need to stay inside.
Yeah, that's all I've been thinking about is, oh God, another day without a fever. This is great.
Well, let's see. What's today? Today's Friday, right? I got home on Sunday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm just about out of the woods. Two more days.
You know what's sick? Because of all the news coverage on this damn virus. What is sick is just like everything I touch, everything I eat, I go, okay, well, I got to count down 2 weeks from that instance. Got to count down 2 weeks from that.
Oh, God, you'll be counting right. Forever. I see you're holding
exactly.
On right now.
It's like at this point, every day is 2 weeks since the last time I thought I killed myself.
Audience, Frank is holding a small orange in his hand right now. He's peeling it with his fingernails. I see it.
Wait a second. My webcam's on.
Yes, it is. He didn't know, but I'm watching him peel the orange.
I've got a clementine in my hand because they actually peel. I can take this off
in one.
Watch.
Oh, look. Wait, put it up. You can hear it. Put it.
Wait.
There you go.
one peel. Piece. I will not be eating this in the microphone. Do not worry.
I do the same thing with mine. I eat them all day long. I talked about that the other day. Lots of vitamin C. Let's start on the coronavirus, right? Because it's interesting. Yesterday, I put up an article from Celia Farber. It was really something. It's called, I'm gonna go to Uncover DC right now and find it. She is just a brilliant writer. I mean, it's called Serfs of Globalism. In the age of corona, what dies first is our right to be, hold on. I'm clicking it. It's coming. Our right to not worry is, okay. Serfs of globalism. In the age of corona, what dies first is the inalienable right not to worry.
And I mean, that's a great title.
Yeah. And so the piece is just a whole big piece about how ultimately positive Donald Trump is, not just about coronavirus, but in general. He's just a positive person. And one of the most interesting things she says in here, because she goes through some of the comments that they've made and some of the statistics and stuff like that. She says, you know, he said, basically, this is all going to be OK. It'll be OK. We'll all be OK. We'll get through it and it'll be fine. And then the collective globalists are like, fine, we're on the cornerstone of a money making scheme the likes of nobody's ever seen before. Why are you trying to dampen people's fears? Like, you know, the testing industry and the vaccine industry and the medicine industry and all the fear mongering that they're using to sell this stuff. And she just makes the argument that the fear about this virus is the only thing they had to take control back that they had lost through Brexit and the Trump-Russia thing that failed and the fact, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's true, because what the hell's the point of the fear? First of all, if this is something new that is out on the scene, whether it is real, it's organic, or it's a laboratory engineered bioweapon, which I believe it is, then what the hell does fear really do? Because you're at least 2 years or a year or so away from any kind of a vaccine that I will never take. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's going to have burned itself out.
Yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just like there is nothing else to do but to remain positive, be extra careful in your life, wash your hands like your grandparents have always told you and you always ignored them. And that's just it. And you just have to go on. And also, just be a little bit more prepared at home. You know, I've been trying to get myself set up over here so I have, like, a makeshift triage here. I've got all my colloidal silver now. I've got food for a few months that I never really cared about. And when this blows over, I'll still have it.
Yep.
And
yep.
So it's just one of those things. So the fear not to worry, the right not to worry, that is a great way of putting it, because it's the only currency that is being exchanged here, because worrying does nothing to help the situation.
No, and Dan Bongino on his podcast yesterday said something really interesting. You know, we take a calculated risk on our lives every single day. Like, you know, the left's talking point, you can't put a price on human life, right? That's Rich coming from the left. But basically, he's saying when you get on a plane, you take a calculated price. What's the chance you're going to crash? If you get in a car and you drive a long distance, what's the chance you're going to get into a crash? You know, you take those kind of risks with you. You know, people, the flu kills God knows how many more people every single year, and you still can't get people to go out and get a flu shot. Nope, I'll never get a flu shot. I'll never get any other shot ever again. Never. Sorry. No.
First of all, the only people in the world who have ever put a price on human life is the left.
Yeah.
They've got a price for hearts. They've got a price for livers. They've got a price for, they've itemized it. They've itemized it.
And this coming from the group of people who we're going to get into, Schumer, of course, are standing out there screaming, wanting to have the right to kill a human life whenever they want, no matter how grown it is. So, well, you know what? That's a good segue. I think people are sick of hearing about this coronavirus. I really do. Like, at this point, the only thing that you can do is make sure you're keeping your hands washed. If you don't want to go out anywhere, don't. You know, make sure you wash your hands. Make sure you don't cough into the air.
Just spend a little less time on Tinder.
Spend a little less time on Tinder. I know Frank's not on Tinder.
Just for a couple of months, you
just
know?
That word is gross for what the function of the app is. There was... I'm not going to say it. Never mind. Stop me.
Sex.
No, not that. Not that. This is too... I don't know who listened. A lot of people listen, so I don't want to say something. There was the name of a strip club that it just was so gross. Like, you'd never set foot in there unless you wanted to, like, walk out with 16 different incommunicable diseases. So anyway, Chuck Schumer.
Speaking of communicable diseases, Chuck Schumer.
Oh, goodness. By the way, I've gotten a bunch of emails in the past couple days of folks that are listening to the podcast because of my good friend, and hopefully soon yours, Frank, Joe Pags. So I just want to give a shout out to all the Joe Pags listeners that are out there. Thank you so much for your support and listening to the show. I'm getting emails. I should start sending them to you.
So, yeah, hey, I love them. I love those emails. I love hearing about the emails coming in. I haven't seen them, but...
No, they're coming in through Uncover DC, so that's why. But I'm going to write back to those folks today. So Chuck Schumer, Chucky Boy was in front of the Supreme Court the other day at a rally. This old senator from New York who knows probably just just this whole topic makes me sick. So he's out there screaming into the microphone. We're going to play a clip of someone else who was screaming into the microphone, too, about this decision that's being made inside the Supreme Court about whether or not doctors should be allowed. There should be required hospitals within 30 miles of an abortion clinic. In what state is it? I don't remember.
Isn't it Alabama or a southern state?
Something like that. Basically, if they rule that it's not required, I think, and I'm not as educated on this as I should be.
It's a state that's not his. That's the whole point here. Well, it's not New York, because you can do whatever the hell you want in New York.
No, it isn't New York. And Chuck Schumer decided that he was going to stand out there, and likely you've heard this before, but we'll play it.
Judge, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Now, he says they're appointed for life. So I don't know what the hell else he thinks we're going to believe he was talking about.
I don't know. But they tried to take out Brett Kavanaugh once before with everything they had. And all they were able to come up with is a conga line of fake sexual assault accusers. So what the hell else could there be? More fake accusations that are more believable? I don't understand. To appeal their decisions to the Supreme Court? I don't understand what they're... It's just I don't know.
So, Carpe Donctum had a really funny retort yesterday. It was something like, I'm trying to find it right now because it's really actually very funny. And I have like 17 things lined up. So I'm scrolling through my timeline right now. But it was something to the effect of, Kavanaugh drinks beer. He's a horrible person. And then he didn't really mean to threaten, you know, to threaten these Supreme Court justices, like also the left. You know what I mean? Like it was funny as hell. And I retweeted
Well, you know, I have a theory. Well, I don't have a theory, but I had something that went through my mind, and it might be controversial.
Please share.
Well, I mean, the Chuck Schumer, he's not very good off script, like many of them aren't. And in 2017, of course, he said something that he probably wish he didn't say at this point, because he tipped not only his hand, but the hand of the entire awful government that he has been a part of for a long time. And he knows the inner workings and how vindictive and autonomous many parts of it is, namely the intelligence community. And in early 2017, he came out and said that famous line that if you take on the intelligence community, they have six ways a Sunday of getting back at you.
Yep.
And what did we learn for the next 3 years, Tracy?
They used that, about seven of them.
That they had, they went all out with everything that they could, with the leaking, with the working in hand with their partners in the media. They did everything they could. The vindictive, and largely autonomous intelligence community. We saw it. And of course, we saw how willing they were to destroy anybody in their way with lies, because if they had something real on Donald Trump, he would have been gone.
Yeah.
So so that was the first thing he tipped. Then, of course, he's just loving the adulation he's getting from this crowd of losers who are hooting and hollering like it's a Beatles concert for butchering babies. And they are and he's talking about going and we're going to come for you and you've released the whirlwind. It made me think, I'm sorry, of the pillow over the face of Antonin Scalia.
No. A lot of people thought that. A lot of people thought that.
First thing I thought about, I mean, you're talking about a Supreme Court justice had found dead with a pillow over his head at a ranch of a major Obama donor in Texas somewhere. That man didn't even get an autopsy. He was cremated before anything. Like I say it time and time again, you find a homeless man dead in a broom closet in a subway in New York City. He gets an autopsy.
No, you're right. That death was really, really weird. And what happened after it was really weird. We covered it when the WikiLeaks came out.
It's just like I don't blame anybody for going there.
No, a lot of people did. A lot of people. Carpe said this: Kavanaugh likes beer. MSM. This man is a rapist. Schumer threatens Kavanaugh. MSM. Calm down. It wasn't a threat. You know, it wasn't a threat. Here's what he said in response.
The president went on publicly to attack the judge who will decide Mr. Stone's fate. Another example of the president's blatant contempt for the independence of the judiciary.
The whole thing is... Ooh, I dropped it. Oh my gosh. I got it. The whole thing, the whole entire thing was him trying to say, well, he did it, but he never did it, President Trump. He's never done that. It's gross. It's gross. And so Justice Roberts came out, of course, and he had a statement on it. Very strongly worded.
Which can tell you just how bad this is if John Roberts said something about this.
Yes. Now, John Roberts said something about President Trump saying that the Supreme Court justices were, quote, Obama justices. Newsflash, they were. Okay. We talked about that when it happened. And he just recently came out and said that Sotomayor and Ginsburg should recuse themselves from making any decisions about his case because they've shown to be biased. They have. They have both said things that are biased towards the president. So now we've got Chief Justice John Roberts saying this morning Schumer spoke at a rally in front of a Supreme Court while a case was being argued inside. He referred to two members of the court by name and said he wanted to tell them. And then he goes through the quote. Justices know criticism comes with the territory, but threatening statements of this sort from the highest levels of government are not only inappropriate, they're dangerous. All members of the court will continue to do their job without fear or favor from whatever quarter. And I think that was pretty definitive. The one thing, though, the rest of this letter in every single screenshot I have ever seen is cut off. Did you notice that?
No.
It's cut off very oddly underneath whatever quarter with no signature or anything like that. Very weird. Very weird. And so, you know, we've got Schumer out there threatening Supreme Court justices. And then we have the curious case I think we touched on a little bit of Donna Brazile. Should we talk about that for now?
Yes, yes. The woman who ruined Frederick Douglass's hairdo.
Yes, and we won't talk about the comparisons of Valerie Jarrett to Austin Powers. We will leave that for another show.
I saw that. Do you think that was a humiliation ritual? Why the hell would that happen? Because it's like she went into a Hollywood costume vault and put it on. It's not even a joke.
She even had the glasses.
Seriously.
She had these. I commented, "Where's Roseanne when you need her?" Because this would have been the perfect thing for Roseanne to speak out on. Poor girl. So Donna Brazile really pissed off Daniel Babinski, Frank, and he wrote this amazing piece where he goes through all of the things that Brazile has done to taint the election for the Democrats in 2016.
You're talking about he wrote in response to the Go to Hell interview?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He says, "I need your outrageous comments stemmed from Ronna McDaniel expressing her viewpoint on what the Democrats are up to with Buttigieg and Klobuchar within hours of Super Tuesday. Yet you indignantly claim there's no coordinated effort and you repeatedly ask for proof." In addition to their sudden departure, deep state players like Rice, Comey, and Brennan started pushing the Biden bus, all on Super Tuesday or in the hours leading up. Then Mike Bloomberg bowed out and voiced his support for Biden. It's not rocket science. It's history repeating itself, and you do know what's going on. It's a really, really, really good... Do you remember becoming the interim chairperson of the DNC after Wasserman Schultz stepped down? And do you remember why she stepped down?
Oh, man.
Really good piece.
And I, like I said, a couple, because I played that interview on Super Tuesday evening, and then again on Wednesday when we woke up and we realized just how amazingly coordinated this takedown of Bernie Sanders was. Again, part two. This is 2.0. I mean, and of course 1.0. It was Donna Brazile who was given the honors of breaking the news to Bernie that he was not going to be allowed to win. She wrote about it.
She laments that she had to do it because it was rigged.
This is the best thing, is that she was oddly forthright about all the things we suspected was going on. She came forward to say that the DNC was broke. The Hillary campaign came in. The only effective fundraisers that were left in the field. So the DNC became a bio suit for the Clinton campaign. There was no way in hell in 2016 she was not going to be allowed to be the nominee. She wrote about this stuff.
She wrote about hiding in her office too, Frank.
After Seth Rich died.
Yep.
You know, not even wanting to walk up to a window.
Mm-hmm. Drawing shades, hiding in her office.
What the hell does this tell you? So it's, and not only that, Tracy, but you know that famous quote, "If that mother effer wins, we're all going to hang from nooses.
Yeah.
That quote, you know the origins of that quote?
Share with us, because I'm not sure I remember.
Okay. Well, this also makes it a little bit more interesting as to how hard and how quickly Matt Lauer's career came to an end. But when she was out there and they were going, it was 2016 and Matt Lauer was doing interviews with both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the run up to the election. He had the audacity of asking an off script question about integrity and about
the
judgment,
emails, right?
About the emails. Now, you talk about how you need to be steady. You have to have good judgment to be president. Well, and he brought up the emails, and she had to actually say on national television again, "I made a mistake," and this and that, and she couldn't avoid it. And apparently, and this was from it was written about by senior producers, because anytime Hillary walks into a room, everybody has to surrender their phones. It was reported that she went so ballistic. She went so crazy after that interview that Matt Lauer put her on the spot like that on television about the emails. She went so crazy, the screeching, it was scary for a lot of people who were there. And the brunt of her ire was directed at Donna Brazile. And that she actually, Hillary got even angrier when Brazile just stood there stone-faced and took it and didn't cower you know, didn't cower. And they say, and the things that she went on to say, they say were some of the most racist things have you ever seen in your life. And I think about why Donna Brazile has changed her tune and is willing to deny what even happened a couple of years ago and just forget like it ever happened.
I don't understand why nobody pushes back on these people when they say this crap on television. Like, why didn't those two hosts say, Donna, you gave debate questions? Like, why didn't someone say that to her? That's the thing that's missing. Like, nobody challenges these idiots. They just get to say whatever they want.
A lot of things are missing. That's why people still think that this entire 90% of the charade that we watch going on in public is still a WWE scripted charade, because it's almost like watching a sitcom, and you know the lines, you know what the character should say if they actually want to diffuse a situation immediately. But you don't say those lines if the goal is to stretch it out for a few more episodes. You know, mm-hmm. And that's why when I see people like Donna Brazile not get pushed back on, I'm like, well, God, like, this is the most obvious thing you can bring up. But then again, she's been hired by Fox now. So
I'm surprised she still has a job. Daniel's calling for her to be fired. I think the way she conducted herself was gross. Like, I don't know. But moving along, remember Wednesday we had Rich Barris on. Great show. Got a lot of people saying how awesome it was, because it was. But I was crunching some numbers that morning, and I did a whole big thread. I think it was on Thursday about the election, the Super Tuesday stuff. I got to go through a couple of these states with you, Frank. I don't know if you've gotten to see this yet. Have you seen any of the stuff that I did?
I saw a few of the screenshots that that Finch shared in the library, but please go through it all.
Okay. Yeah, because I want your reaction, because it's pretty crazy. So I don't know. Let me pull up real quick, because I think California... 2020 Super Tuesday changed a little bit. Here we go. Nope. Did it? Yeah, it did. So now Bernie Sanders has 1,089,373. Hold on. Let me just change the spreadsheet. And so basically what I was doing was going through these vote totals as they stood at that time, and comparing them to 2016. And then after I compared them to 2016 for all the candidates that were available, look, California was just a mind blower. Donald Trump got 1.529 million votes, 1,529,882 votes. Last, in 2016, he got 1,635,000 votes, but there was a 28% downturn in turnout. So in other words, 28% less people turned out in 2020 to vote in the primary, but he got basically more, proportionally more votes. The biggest thing was the Democrats. There was a 41% decline in turnout, a little bit less now. Total Democrat votes in 2020 was 2.9 million, and it was 5 million in 2016.
For the primaries?
For the primaries. In California. Now, Bernie Sanders got 2.3 million votes last time around. Clinton got 2.7 million votes in the primary. And now you're looking at Bernie getting only a little over a million and Biden getting 733,000. So Trump beats Bernie right now in votes.
Yeah, I wonder, and I don't know if Rich, I should have asked, this is the only question I didn't ask, was... historically, how can you take that and translate that to the general election? Because it's almost like the midterms for me, where I understand that there's a lot of people that grasp how important it is for the midterms to pan out one way or another. But it's so much less glamorous than going out for a presidential election. How many people just don't care about the primaries because they're just going to vote?
Lots.
They're just going to, vote Democrat or Republican no matter what come November.
That's the thing. That's why this is so important. So if you're seeing President Trump beating the entire field of Democrat voters in a primary where he doesn't have any competition and people are just going out to vote for him for the sake of it, And those are the, like, you know, if his vote totals are beating the entire Democrat field, and the Democrat primary right now is super important, life or death, right? That's telling for turnout in November, for sure. Because that means all those people, plus the people that you just mentioned, will be out voting. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah, it does. It would be great. It was really interesting there, too, that both Chunk Younger and whatchamacall, George Papadopoulos, both got boxed out of that Katie Hill district. And yes. Rich was talking about that we may see a semi-significant, at least, resurgence in some swing districts out there in California.
Yeah.
But that's, of course, if somehow enthusiasm can trump the door-to-door ballot harvesting that's been going on. You know, it's one thing if you get people that can leave the house and go vote, because the other side is going door to door collecting votes, so people don't even have to leave the house.
Yeah, no, I know. And then another thing that people brought up about California in particular was the Judicial Watch voter rolls purge having something to do with it. It was like 1 million votes in L.A., I believe. Another huge state I wanted to. There was a lot of them, I got to be honest. But another huge state that I want to talk about is Texas. And Rich talked about this one too. Donald Trump got, during 2016, of course, there were a field of candidates out there, not just him, but he got 757,000 votes in 2016. He got close to 2 million votes in Texas this time around. Joe Biden is 716,030 votes and he won Texas. Donald Trump beats the top four in the Democrat Party just in votes alone. So if you took Biden, Sanders, Bloomberg, and Warren and added up all their votes, Donald Trump's votes in Texas in a primary where nobody else is on the ballot, beat them all, which is massive.
Yeah, it is.
So Texas is way to go, Texas. Anyway, that was just some interesting math I should update it. I'm going to do this for every primary because people really liked it and it's super interesting to me. So I'm going to start crunching numbers. And there's
you
that.
See, based on this, it should give people an amazing amount of confidence. And I don't see how confidence makes people complacent. You still have to go out and be a part of it.
People were really angry at me.
What?
For sharing the numbers. Like, some people were like, don't do this. It's going to make people not vote. And I'm like, uh-uh. No. You can't share data.
No. You see, this is the thing. You have to. No, I don't believe that at all. I don't. Doing other things like saying, like Fox News saying that the midterms were over before the polls were closed is how you get people to stop voting. You have to trick them. But this is something different. This is, I mean, you see this on a primary when you know many people are just sitting it out. I mean, I think the New York primary over here is April 28th or 29th. I think Lauren's birthday. Or the day before Lauren's birthday, I may just go out there and vote just to see how things a litmus test to see how things have maybe changed in these really blue states. You know, you see that ripple effect in California. I'm just curious about New York and New Jersey now.
Yeah, New Jersey's in play.
That's what I'm saying. After 175,000 people look for tickets.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, you've activated something there. You're not this does not have the effect of making people say, "Oh, it's in the bag. I'm staying home."
I don't.
This
think
has the effect.
Now.
No, this has the effect of people saying, "Yo, let's see how big we can make this wave."
I think that people want to win as big as possible. Guess what, Frank?
What?
We have a new sponsor. I'm super excited to talk about.
Oh, wait a second. Is this a deodorant?
Yes, Native deodorant. Frank, did you know many conventional deodorants have aluminum?
Yes.
And what it does is it forms a plug in your sweat glands to keep you from sweating. Yuck. Ugh. That's scary.
Gross.
Native's deodorant is made without aluminum so you can feel better about what you're putting on your body. It is safe, formulated without aluminum, parabens, or talc. It's vegan and never tested on animals. It has ingredients you know. It's made with ingredients you've heard of like coconut oil and shea butter. And let me tell you, that is absolutely true because usually when you put on deodorant, sometimes it's like chalky and weird and rough. And this stuff glides right on. It is really awesome. And making the switch to an aluminum-free deodorant doesn't mean you have to sacrifice on performance. Native keeps you smelling fresh all day long. There are over 10 scents with this deodorant, too. There's classics and also rotating seasonals. Their classics are coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose, that's the one I got, cucumber and mint, and eucalyptus and mint. And it comes in a wide variety of options for men, women, and even teens. There's also an unscented option and a baking soda-free formula for those with sensitivities. So tell me, Frank, what you thought about this deodorant because we got to use it.
This is the kind of sponsor I really love. Deodorant use is actually the reason why I take showers at night before I go to bed. A, it saves me time in the morning. And B, it makes me sleep better. And C, but should actually be A, is that I can go to bed not only clean, but that my armpits can have at least 7 hours of nothing on them. You know, and I don't put deodorant on before I go to bed. I wake up and then I put deodorant on so I can give them a rest from all the crap that's in deodorant. But when you told me about this, I couldn't wait to get it. I picked out the eucalyptus mint.
Yep.
And I'm always skeptical because I tried all the other natural ones and it usually makes my underarms feel sticky. And then also it's just a weird, it doesn't stop anything and it doesn't smell right. It's just weird. It kind of, I don't know, but this was so good. It actually goes on drying, and I can't wait to get more. I don't care if they even buy any more spots. I'm going to buy more sticks.
You're a customer. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, I really do like it.
No, the lavender one, I was worried about it a little bit, and it still worked for me, and it worked nicely. Like, it was smooth. It's smooth. Did you wear? Let me ask you a question on the spot. Did you wear it while you were working out, and how did it perform?
Absolutely. I mean, I work out all throughout the week, so I don't have a deodorant for workout days, so it got used, and I'm very confident with it on. So it's been through the ringer, and yeah, I'm gonna keep using it.
Cool. We love new sponsors too. So for your first 20%, for 20% off your first purchase, I should say, go to nativedeodorant.com. Use promo code DARKTOLIGHT during checkout. Again, go to nativedeodorant.com for 20% off your first purchase when you use DARKTOLIGHT during checkout. And we're excited to have them on board and we're excited to be using their product. So ba-bum bum ching. Now yep. we're gonna switch topics a little bit here. We're gonna go into the Carter Page lawsuit. This is going to be interesting, Frank.
I'm glad that you're covering this because I saw the headlines, but I did not read into it.
Carter Page is suing as himself an individual, as his companies, Global Energy Capital and Global Natural Gas Ventures. He's suing the DNC Services Corporation, Perkins Coie, Mark Elias as an individual, and Michael Sussman as an individual, both from Perkins Coie. And I started reading this lawsuit, and I started scratching my head. And maybe there's a good answer for this that I just don't know. He throughout the lawsuit, his attorney talks about how, you know, Steele lied about him meeting with Sechin and Dvorkin. Steele lied about him going to Russia for whatever. This maligned him. He got death threats. You know, all the stuff that we know already. And it says that Mark Elias met with, you know, some journalists once, and it blames Perkins Coie and Sussman and Elias for all of this, I guess because they paid for it, but he doesn't say that they really did, like, he doesn't address that they'd done anything wrong. Like, he says that it's because of them that this got widespread attention. But the case, in my opinion, if I'm not a lawyer, I am studying to be a lawyer, though. That's a big secret I have been keeping from everybody. But
like really?
Yes.
Oh, great.
I'm going to take the bar. I am. I can't. But,
do you have a goal like 2022 or something like that?
Yeah. You know what? It is 2022 because it's going to take me that long to memorize all these damn laws. Do you know how many laws there are?
Too many.
Way too many damn laws.
Tacitus warned us about this.
It's crazy. The book is, it's okay. So anyway, if I'm going to attack the things we're about to talk about as just a regular person that doesn't have, I'm not a lawyer. Like, if I were debating this lawsuit, I would debate it in this way. I'm going to pretend to be the DNC. I had no idea, Carter Page, that information wasn't real. We didn't know that Christopher Steele was providing bad information. We had no idea would we purchase bad information? And then not only that, but I'm not going to show you my conversations that I had with the DNC. That's privileged. We were their attorneys. So okay. Now what? It's a he said, she said. Not only that, but the lawsuit is filed in Illinois when Perkins Coie and everything else that went on is in DC and Fusion GPS isn't in Illinois. The only people in Illinois is the DNC. So it's almost like they're choosing the wrong venue. It's going to be a jurisdiction issue. It's going to come up. They even address briefly the privilege issue because the Perkins Coie is going to say, we're not, they waived privilege in another case about Fusion GPS, but they're not going to waive privilege for a civil defamation suit. Like
not only that, but they also have the option of throwing the federal government under the bus there, too, because there was so much backbending that was going on at the FBI to that gave legitimacy and legitimate concern to all these Russian theories that you can the DNC and Perkins Coie can just as easily said, well, yeah, we didn't know it was bad information and neither did the FBI. You know, look how far they went with it.
Yeah. Exactly. So here, let's listen. Despite knowing the information in the Steele dossier was uncorroborated, defendants needed to have the information released before the 2016 election in order to further their own political motives. On information and belief, defendants directed Fusion GPS and Steele to disseminate the false information to the media and even to the FBI. Fusion GPS and Steele, as DNC consultants, were eager to comply. Their loyalty was with their clients and not to discretion or the truth. Then they go through how Steele was fired, and they say, in short, Fusion GPS and Steele were not interested in serving the public. They acted as hired guns whose obligations ran to furthering the interest of their clients. Here, DNC, Perkins Coie, and Ilias. Indeed, Fusion had been accused of acting as an unregistered agent of the Russian government on behalf of its clients, such as Prevezen Holdings, a Russian company. And then they go down all the reasons why the dossier is not true. They use two reasons that he never met with those people. I mean, with the breadth of information available to Carter Page's defense team or prosecute, like his case to his counsel, the case is so, they could have put so much more into this and sued Fusion GPS or Christopher Steele or the FBI. They're suing the DNC and Mark Ilias. I don't understand. One more thing. They contradict themselves in their own complaint. They say the average person who read or heard the defamatory statements understood them to be statements of fact that Dr. Page met with Sechin, Devekin, and the Kremlin. These were not opinions. These were statements of facts that could be objectively characterized as true or false. But normal everyday people believed them, right? The average person who read or heard understood them to be serious charges against Dr. Page, that he was conspiring with the United States geopolitical rival Russia on matters against their interests. And then they list some of the threats that he got. The problem here is that in point 84, which is a few down, they say the Steele dossier amounted to no more than internet rumor, and it was regularly dismissed as such by people who read it. Well, which one is it? Is it that everyday people who read it thought he was a Russian asset, or is it that people who read it thought that it was an internet rumor? Because you just destroy your own case when you say that.
Oh, God, I want the jump rope act to end. I just want somebody to nail these people to a wall. Well, I can't stand it. It's almost like we're playing. We're right on top of the snake, and we're just wrestling with it now, and it's trying to wiggle through fingers, and it's just, you know, at one point the snake had the entire room to run in and try to get away. Now it's a little corner. It's just trying to use vocabulary games, and it's trying to use technicalities and word switches and reverse psychology to rationalize what was going on. This is such a burnout kind of phase here. It's so upsetting.
I don't understand. It is upsetting, and all the things you just said are right, but I don't understand. This is the first lawsuit that Page is filing. Why? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's just, what is he doing? Like, what is he doing? It's 20 something pages long. I'll put it in the show notes for everyone to read. I'm writing a note right now. I did a stream about it yesterday. And I just, I don't understand. It's so, it's, I don't get it. I'm throwing my hands up in the air. I don't know. Frank, I don't know.
I don't know either.
Next, we have the town hall with President Trump yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sound so excited.
I didn't see it.
Oh, well, I just read a tweet that came by. The Flat Earth Society posted, apparently. The Flat Earth Society has members all around the globe.
Oh, I saw that one.
That's funny. I laugh at the stupidest crap. I'm one of those people that laughs at really dumb jokes, but not the good ones.
My husband. Do the good jokes go over your head?
I don't know. I don't think so. I just don't find them as funny as the stupid ones. I don't know. My sister used to do something called like Funny Friday, where she would send me a dumb joke every single Friday. Some of them were really bad. Funny stuff.
Dumb Joke Friday on Dark to Light.
Yeah. Two peanuts walked into a bar. One was assaulted. That's my favorite joke ever. I laughed so hard when I heard that the first time.
You watched The Office, right?
No.
Okay, well, in season four, when Angela and Dwight are sitting down and they're trying to see whether or not they're going to get back together after Dwight killed Angela's cat, and they're sitting down at a table at a restaurant, and they're trying to find things to say to each other. And Angela says to Dwight, "I heard a funny joke today. I heard a joke today." And Dwight goes, "Oh, that's funny." And she goes, "Yes, it was."
That's it.
That's it.
There are some more Mueller 302s coming out, by the way, before we get into the town hall. And it's super interesting. I'm sending myself an undercover Huber thread right now to read when we're done here. But just keep your eyes peeled because CNN is getting like a whole, and Jason Leopold and those guys are all getting a whole bunch of FOIA requests submitted or fulfilled. And all the stuff that they're talking about, like they're talking about the nonsense and they're hiding the rest of the stuff that's in there in the 302s, like that they don't want people to know. So we're all finding them because once that stuff comes out, it's out. Stupid. Stupid, stupid. Okay. So President Trump did a town hall yesterday and, unlike with most things, it was actually a town hall where they pushed back on some of his answers and challenged him. You know, like the Democrats do town halls and you just see them, you know, like kiss their butts and get brown oil over their nose. They don't push back on anything. It wasn't like that.
No. Of course. Well, is this a surprise?
No.
That he would actually get challenged?
It was good, though, that he got challenged. I really liked it. I really liked that he got challenged. Here's what he said about Biden and who he would rather face.
I thought it was going to happen. I mean, he's going to make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and much more than that.
So you want to face Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders? That's my question.
I'll tell you, I was all set for Bernie because I thought it was going to happen. We get ready for things, right? So mentally, I'm all set for Bernie. Communist, I had everything down. He's a communist. I was all set. And then we have this crazy thing that happened, right, on Tuesday, which he thought was Thursday. But he also said 150 million people were killed with guns and he was running for the United States Senate. Support me, I'm running for the United States. There's something going on there. But I was all set. I was all set. And, you know, I mean, he's going to make...
So... He never says who he'd rather run against, but I think he's doing a masterful job of screwing with the Democrats' heads.
Yeah, well, it's just because it's just a matter of I don't care. I don't care who runs. Look at what's going on here. Unless, of course, this is what everybody thinks it is. And Joe Biden is just a placeholder until we get to a brokered convention. And then maybe he gets lumped in with somebody else that'll take over for him after the 1 year he's only promised that he could be able to handle an office. He wouldn't be able to handle that.
Somebody said somewhere that Michelle Obama is not eligible to run or can't run for president because of some like financial thing that happened with some offshore. I don't remember exactly what it was. I got to look into it, but she can't do it.
Well, I did cover that article that I had seen about her trying to get out the vote over there in Chicago or something, where she's out there on the campaign trail to drive up the voter turnout, which is, that's going to be funny. And she even said there too, I'm not running for anything, which you could just take that as far as it can go. But
I did share your theory on the Joe Pag show, by the way.
Which theory?
Your theory of the brokered convention.
Well, what in particular? Because a lot of people are saying that this is playing out.
We had just talked about it that day, and we were talking about all these numbers that I had put together. And I said, you know, it's interesting because my co-host has a really interesting theory. I said, Frank has an interesting theory about brokered convention. And we talked about it for a couple minutes. And it's not like anyone is like, I don't know, I don't think that'll happen. Nobody's saying that.
It has to be. It has to be right now, because you look at Joe Biden, you say, first of all, there's too much on the line. There's too much on the line for Joe Biden to be the nominee, to be for this party. They either have to be completely, there's nothing left, or they actually, I don't know. He has to be a placeholder for something. He's got to be a way that people can believably try to take this away from Bernie Sanders, and then maybe him too.
I
don't know. It just doesn't seem to me that he could really be a person, even for people as desperate as the people running the Democrat Party right now, for him to actually be the one who they're vesting all of their hopes in. It doesn't make any sense to me. So there's got to be something, and of course we're gonna have the great privilege of sitting back and watching how this brawl plays out.
It's interesting because he's saying, I was all ready for Bernie. I was all prepared. I you know, I'm all prepared for Bernie. And then they just got me with Biden, you know? Look what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
He's so good. Here's a Pennsylvania former Democrat voter who's being asked by McCallum what he's going to do. How can he be wooed over to the left again in 20... Here.
You know, answered as you...
Hold on.
I want to ask David actually a follow-up question, because you are really the typical voter. I think you are a lifelong Democrat who crossed over and voted for President Trump in 2016 in areas like we are in right now in Luzerne and Lackawanna County. So, you know, obviously now Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, whoever it is going to try to get your vote back. So I'm curious, is there anything that or any issue that they could answer for you that would change your mind, do you think?
I'm focused on the economy and on regulation and deregulation, and I like what's happened in the country in the last 4 years. And
thank you.
Thankful
thank
for
you,
your
buddy.
Efforts, sir, and I hope we can continue on that.
I think they thought you were going to give them a different answer.
No, I wanted to hear because I do think it's very...
That sounded like a setup question.
No.
But David, you're my man.
I wanted... You know what? That's not true. I said I'm very interested in this voter because we want to know what, you know, how voters like you are going to vote next time around, because we love to follow the story of the movement of the electoral. And I think it's fascinating that you answered as you did.
Well, Martha...
Hold on.
This area of Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania itself has the best numbers it's ever had. It's got the best economy.
He is the only president I've ever seen who looks better after 3 or 4 years of presidency than he did before he started. I can't.
I know. I know. Especially with everything thrown at him.
I mean, he thrives on it. It like feeds his soul. He's so relaxed and comfortable and calm. He's got no freaking gray hair. He has a nice, vibrant color to him. He doesn't look worn down. And, you know, he doesn't let anyone walk all over him. He says a couple times in this town hall, we can't let them hit us and not hit back. You know, the time to do it, because they're like, let's get back to, you know, normal everyday politics. Let's stop being so divisive. Yeah. And he's like, no, no.
No, we're not going back. But the other thing there, too, is... I hope they all remember. And this is once again the biggest problem for the Democrat Party now, because they're a purely socialist party, and it is the opposite. It's the opposite. See, everybody liked in the 90s when I started just noticing things. I didn't really take anything into consideration and I didn't care. But the thing that I noticed in the 1990s was that Republicans tended to come off as these stiff, socially awkward people who you probably didn't want to go to one of their birthday parties. And Democrats, they were – everybody always said – like if people in my life, like a guardian or a parent or something would – like my stepfather, Skip, if he would say, you know, if he would ever tell me why he was a Democrat, he says because they're the party of the little guy, of the working guy. And I was always thinking like, well that's always – I guess that's – I would love to make some money in my life, but I guess that is me.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was always just a false conception – of what is more, you know, who is more attractive socially? Who seems more like real? Yeah. Who seems more like real, loose, reasonable people? Because obviously I didn't know anything. I didn't know how policy or anything like that could actually even affect a person. But, you know, you look at this and you say, if the Democrat Party is ever going to recapture the votes of people like this guy at the town hall that was just talked to, they're going to have to moderate. And if they moderate at all, they're going to become Republicans because they just have to stop with the socialism stuff. And it's not like the Republican Party is very conservative, but it's a nudge in the right direction. And that's the only thing I actually really even look at federal elections for. We all know that if we're going to make any change, it has to be locally. So in a national sense, objectively, this is something that if people can just get over the slander and the libel and the venom spitting that has been going on to create any kind of differential between Donald Trump and everybody else, then there's no reason why people should be against closing off our damn borders.
Especially now. I there was a question about this last night, Frank. Not to interrupt you, but there was a question about this last night where he's talking about the military and bringing our troops home. And I thought that it was one of the best responses, the most passionate responses and honest responses he gave. He was talking about like, we're over there, we're securing the border between Syria and Turkey or whatever. And he's like, we shouldn't be doing this. And I wanted him to say so badly, they won't even let us do that here in the United States. And we're over there with our military doing it. Like, he didn't say it, but I could feel like he wanted to say it.
Those are things I wish he would say because it's so obvious and it's just so right there. And if you look at what Turkey is doing, how they have opened up the gates of chaos at the border of Greece, I played a 25 second clip of footage of the invasion on the beaches over there. It looks like colorized vault footage of Omaha Beach in 1944. And it's just a complete invasion of Europe and Turkey is just letting it on through. And that is what the same type of NGOs that are global, they don't care what hemisphere they're operating in. They want that at the southern border and it doesn't help anybody.
Yeah.
So it's the common sense of lessening regulations to get out of the common person's way to follow dreams and put ideas to the test to try to make their own businesses and not be bothered. I mean, that's really what this is all about. I mean, this whole China thing should really accentuate the evil of the policies in past administrations that actually drove off companies into the arms of China. And now we can see how untrustworthy a country that is. We should never have so much manufacturing and conditions or dependency put into a country like that when we can just as easily do it here. So anybody who drove up the corporate tax rate to nearly 40% and sent everybody packing to foreign countries should be arrested.
Yeah. No,
should be arrested.
And not only that, but like you're talking about the what we're dealing with, and people are just starting to finally realize how much of our damn medicine is made over there. That's frightening to me. Frightening. Yep. Terrifying.
You want to talk about national security threats. Taxation is a national security threat. You can see it right here. Taxes and regulations destroyed economic nationalism here. And now we're dependent on countries like China, where you can't get a straight answer for anything.
No, it's gross. It's gross. Oh, Lord. So, yeah, so he had a really good town hall. If you go to Fox News' channel on YouTube, it's in three parts. It's about an hour long. Worth every minute of it. Loved it. Thought he could have done better answering some questions, to be honest. Like, there are answers to some of these questions that he just didn't use. Like, he didn't answer some questions that bothered me a little bit. Like, dude, you don't have to, like, he could answer these. Like, there's answers for these. You know them. Use your answers. He kind of just pushed them aside. Like, the Obamacare answer, what, you know, he said, that's one of the things I got to say I'm most disappointed about that we weren't able to accomplish that I said we would accomplish. But we did get rid of the individual mandate, and that was a major thing. And then, you know, we need to have the Republicans back in Congress, and we need to keep the and grow the Senate lead. And I'm like, but you had that when you started and you couldn't get anything done. What's going to change this time around? Like, he can't answer to that, but
you can just as easily say that we had he stumbled onto the field of, you know, what we knew the Republican Party, the GOP, to be a bunch of spineless slugs that knew how to say the right thing during an election. And then when they finally got somebody who was willing to actually put the ball past the goal line, they all started, you know, squirming, retiring, not running for office anymore. They had to get, I mean, there's a huge replacement that had to happen. And there's a huge kind of a washout of many kind of old school, I don't know, gangster types that played the good cop. That's just pretty much it. It was good cop, bad cop. They always play the good cop in the dichotomy between them and the Democrats. But they're all trying to get the same thing. They want money. They want to get into all of our pockets. Yep. And that was traditionally what they played. So now we need somebody. We need, you know, forget good cop, bad cop. We need some Serpicos. That's what we need. We need the Serpico party that comes on in and says, you know what? I'm doing the right thing no matter how many you corrupt mother are here. That's what I mean.
I like that. I like that party. I want to be a part of it.
I want to be part of the Serpico party.
Serpico. One last thing before we go that I thought was really great, too. He was asked about the deficit and the fact that he's added about $3 trillion to it. And he said that he would have the budget balanced basically within 8 years. And he said, you know, I understand. I'm very concerned about it, too. And he started to get into technical economic numbers, which, you know, he knows everything. He knows more about the economy than most economists do. And he stopped. And then he said, you know, we had to support the military. We had to make the military. They ran out of ammunition at one point, he said. And it was just unacceptable. He's like, but what people aren't realizing is we're going to be able to fix all this because of all the money that we have coming in now from these trade deals that we reworked that we did not have coming in before. Billions and billions and billions of dollars. So, you know, we've got to make some cuts. There's going to be some things we need to obviously stop spending on. But he thinks that we'll be able to balance the budget, which would be absolutely stunning if they let him have a 4-year administration and he can get rid of the deficit. And he also said that interest rates are helping us and he wants to refinance the debt, which are things I've never heard a president say ever.
What did he say about spending, though? We spend almost $3 trillion a year on entitlements that
he talked about those.
Not only bloated and unsustainable, but they're being tapped into by people who have never put a dime into the system.
Yeah. He talked about having to cut entitlements, but he didn't say which ones. And of course, that's because, you know, honestly, that was one of the last questions. I don't think he wants to tackle the fact that he's going to go after Medicaid or if he is or Social Security or whatever he's going to do. I don't think he wants to tackle that right now. Wouldn't be smart, to be honest, would it? Would it be smart to start talking about that right now?
I mean, he off the bat, he can eliminate hundreds of agencies and councils and all of that's the hundreds. I'm talking about, I mean, hold on, like here, pause for a second.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're back.
There's so many agencies here and they all have budgets that are renewed. I mean, even things like the World War I Centennial commission.
Frank, that's really important, Frank. Don't
It's still on the books. It's now we're a couple of years past the centennial.
No.
It's still getting money.
That is an important expenditure, Frank. It's important, okay?
Africa. Let me see here. There are set to be incorporated 2019. We have, notably with respect to numbers of agencies, Administrative Conference of the United States, which lists 115 agencies in the appendix. Most recently, source book there. Filing had something to say here. 78 independent executive agencies, 174 components of the executive departments as units that comply with the Freedom of Information Act imposed on every agency. They list 96 independent executive units, 220 components of the executive departments. An even more inclusive listing comes from USA.gov, which lists 137 independent executive agencies and 268 units in the cabinet. And in 2015, Chairman Chuck Grassley noted, the Federal Register indicates that there are over 430 departments, agencies, and sub-agencies in the federal government. You want to talk about balancing the budget.
Bloat.
If you're scared of touching entitlements at first, start here and start with telling everybody, you know what? We loved helping the world with foreign aid for decades and decades, but we just can't do it anymore. That would be great.
I'm with you. Completely.
Cut every dime. Don't send a hammer to Africa or South America evermore. I don't care. No more hammers. No nails. Nothing.
What about nail files?
Save it all.
Are you okay with that?
What's that?
Nail files?
Yeah. No, you can.
Okay.
You can't even board a airplane with a nail file.
What about an emery board?
That might be okay. Used emery boards, recycled emery boards. I'm fine with sending recycled emery boards to Africa.
Frank, what are you doing on the show tonight before we go today?
I actually have John D'Souza on the show tonight. Do you know who John D'Souza is?
No.
John D'Souza has investigated and collected experiences on paranormal topics for two decades now, an FBI special agent.
Ooh.
Who maintained top secret security clearances for over 25 years, and he's worked on counterterrorism, violent crime cases, but he's also collected what he calls the real life X-Files.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we've got an FBI special agent coming on tonight to talk about the great beyond and the paranormal.
How
maybe
long
I can
is
talk
with you for?
I don't know. I'm going to have him on 7:30, and then I'm not gonna relegate this talk to only a half hour. I'll take it as long as he wants to go. I want to talk about what he knows about looking glass technology. Maybe time travel, interdimensional play, remote viewing. I have to collect my thoughts.
I'm so excited for the show tonight because as you know, I listened to it from the parking lot of the little gymnastics place where my son hurt his toe the last time.
Damn.
Awesome. Cool.
Almost got in the way if you're listening.
The helicopter got in the way, Frank, dropping me down there. That was the problem, really.
It was great, though. It was a very good pilot.
You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn at 2:30 Eastern. On TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you guys all on Monday.
Later.
This is an MJ Morning Show podcast quick fix on Radio Influence.
I wear contacts, but I've always had you ever see me in my glasses? Did I ever come to work in my glasses?
No.
I think I remember you bringing out like something that looked like readers or something.
Yeah, I remember those as well.
Like drugstore readers.
I wear contact lenses because my eyes suck. I've got one eye that's nearsighted, one eye that's farsighted because I have keratoconus. And I've worn hard contact lenses, or technically they're RGP, rigid gas permeable.
Nobody cares.
Lenses.
What's your eye disease called?
Keratoconus.
Coronavirus? Coronavirus,
yeah,
exactly. In your eyes?
No, it's not.
Holy cow.
The MJ Morning Show podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, MJMorningShow.com, and RadioInfluence.com.